Hi, my name is Sam Blizzard. Welcome to Comms from the Shed, the interview show where you get to hear from a range of diverse and interesting voices on how they've coped during the global pandemic. In this series, we'll be taking an informal look at life, talking to people who've been doing incredible things, and asking them about their hopes for the future in both their personal and professional lives. Hope you enjoy it. On today's episode of Comms from the Shed, we welcome a female entrepreneur, an author and motivational speaker, who was the Director of Marketing and Communications at Intel. She's published two books, Divas Doing Business and Get Your Hustle On. And not only that, she's opened a restaurant in our hometown of Oregon. Monique Hayward, thanks for joining us today.
Yes, thank you so much, Sam. It's lovely to be with you. I am intrigued by Comms from the Shed.
Welcome virtually to the Shed. It's like the TARDIS.
I think it's pretty late in the day for you. It's early in the day for me.
The sun is setting on the shed. Hopefully that's, you know, not too scary a metaphor to start our conversation. I wanted to ask you, Monique, first of all, because, you know, part of the reason behind Comms from the Shed was all about speaking to a range of diverse and interesting people and trying to articulate what this has felt like in the last sort of 12 to 14 months of the global pandemic. I mean, what would you say, just to kick off for our listeners, what would you say are the biggest challenges you've faced into during the last 12 months?
Sure. That's a fantastic way to start. I have had a challenge, right? In fact, I wound up in a situation where I took a new job with a new company, and I mean, within 6-7 months of joining that new company, wound up in a situation where we had a change in leadership and a change in direction and strategy that directly affected me and the 22 people who were in my marketing and communications organization. And so I wasn't expecting that, needless to say, to be looking for a job so soon after taking a new job. And but it's actually given me pause because even though, you know, when sort of the fire was raging at the time, you know, this is back in July, August timeframe where this happened, I decided that I would take a step back. How is it that I want to, you know, reemerge from, you know, all of this challenge and, you know, sort of all of these obstacles that have been put in our way with the pandemic and, you know, learning how to work from home and learning how to manage teams remotely and learning how to, you know, to really be effective in our relationships that we're trying to build in a way that, you know, when you're used to being in the office and catching people on breaks or, you know, catching them in the hallway, now you have to kind of legislate that through Microsoft Teams or Zoom.
And how do you think remote working is influencing the way people think about their next career move?
The world has opened in terms of career possibility and career opportunity. As organizations have realized that, and the technology infrastructure does have the capability to support people working from anywhere, anytime, in any capacity, in far-reaching places that you could not have sourced before, to prove that, you know, you can be just as effective or even more productive and effective in working remotely in some cases than being, you know, in an office 5 days a week for 40 hours a week, right? So I think that it gives us more choice. It gives us more flexibility to seek out companies or organizations that we may not have even considered because it was, you know, in another place, in another industry, in another capacity that we weren't even anticipating.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I wanted to ask you, because you mentioned tech there, and you've spent over 20 years in the tech industry working at Intel. And I just wondered what you thought about COVID-19, because perhaps in some quarters there was some skepticism about the rise of kind of global tech companies prior to the pandemic happening. But do you think COVID-19 was the making of new tech? I mean, did the crisis almost sort of seal the deal?
I think that, yeah, for the technology industry in general, you know, the likes of, you know, Intel, Microsoft, you know, HP, Cisco, Workday, you know, you name all of, you know, Facebook, Google, you know, Amazon, everybody who has a role to play in how we take advantage of the remote infrastructure has come out a winner in all of this. And you know, I guess we could have a conversation about, you know, whether or not, you know, these tech companies are too big, or, you know, they have too much power, or they have too much influence. But at the end of the day, I mean, we all use them and we all take advantage of the infrastructure that has been built. I mean, I don't think that there's anybody on this planet who thinks that they can live without the internet, or live without their PC, or live without their phone. It's put in stark, I think, relief that, you know, this is an essential part of our lives, an essential part of how we get things done, how we do business, how we live our lives, how we work, how we play, how we show up. And yeah, those companies have benefited for sure.
Now, I think it's fair to say that you're known as a pretty entrepreneurial person, a very entrepreneurial sort of spirit. I remember when the pandemic kicked in, I mean, certainly in the UK, there was a feeling that you'd be crazy to start a business right now. You know, the high street was closing down and people were being put on furlough and, you know, all of those things that happened when we went into crisis mode. I'm starting to sense a different view, though, of entrepreneurs and that kind of entrepreneuring spirit sort of 12 months on. What's your feeling about it? As somebody who has started businesses yourself, is this a kind of golden age for entrepreneurs, or anyone starting of thinking and opening a business?
Yeah, I think this is a fantastic time to be thinking about entrepreneurship if that is in your plan. Like you said, I've started, you know, multiple businesses over the last 15 years or so. And I have a venture right now with a business partner down in Phoenix, Arizona. It's a personal chef company, because we actually launched our business at the end of 2019. Oh my gosh, within a very short time, here comes, you know, the lockdown, the stay-at-home orders, and we're like, oh my goodness. What we decided to do, and I think what a lot of entrepreneurs do, if they're thinking clearly and strategically and rationally about the situation, why did I start this business in the first place? What is it that we can do to ensure that this business is going to survive? We, as a personal chef service for clients who were not too keen on going to restaurants, I decided to invest heavily in marketing, because that's what a lot of people don't wind up doing when they're going through a crisis or going through a downturn. You know, they start to cut back on those kinds of investments. And so I said, you know what, I'm going to actually invest in marketing and communications and brand building. And one thing that I came up with as positioning around the new marketing strategy was, your home is your new favorite restaurant. And that was super simple. People could get it. Because in the context of, you know, the pandemic, with, you know, restaurants being at half capacity, you know, all the sanitation measures they have to take, you know, the fact that you have to wear masks, you know, it affects the experience, like all of that stuff, right? Where, you know, we could actually, you know, enter your home and do it safely, do it securely, and give you a memorable experience that you'll be talking about for the rest of your life, that, you know, you couldn't even get in a fine dining restaurant because, you know, of all of the constraints that those entrepreneurs found themselves in.
You graduated in journalism and you did an MBA in marketing. What was life like for you kind of growing up? Where do you think you got the entrepreneurial spirit to start your own business? Who were your sort of inspirations growing up?
So, you know, I split my childhood between New York City and Columbia, South Carolina. So I moved from New York when my parents got divorced, when I was like 9, 10 years old. But we would go back to the city for the summer to, you know, visit my grandparents. My grandmother was an entrepreneur, and she also had a day job as a nurse. So what my grandmother would do is that she would actually do her nursing job at the hospital where she worked at in New York, and she would work overnight. And then she would, you know, drive from Queens into Manhattan, where her beauty salon was. And so she would work at the beauty salon all day. And then she would come home, you know, late in the day, you know, say 6, 7 o'clock in the evening. She would, you know, fix herself dinner, take a nap, basically, you know, sleep for about 4 or 5 hours, and then get up and do everything all over again. So when my brother and I would visit in the summers, she would take us to her beauty salon, and we would sit there and, you know, listen to all kind of the beauty shop banter. you know, do various chores with my grandma. And, you know, she would make us sit there for hours and hours because, you know, we were in our teens and we couldn't really go anywhere or do anything on our own. So, and I never really sort of appreciated all of that. I was kind of bored and, you know, sort of like, why is my grandmother making me sit here? But then as I got older and as I thought about where I was with my career when I was in my late 20s, early 30s, and wasn't entirely satisfied or fulfilled, I felt like, you know, I needed to fill in that gap. And so I went back to that inspiration with my grandmother. It was like, well, you know, my grandmother held down her job and her career, and she also started a business, and she didn't, you know, she didn't kill herself doing it, really. So maybe I could do that.
No, I was just going to say, it sounds fantastic. I just wonder if you remember any of the characters from those days.
Oh, yeah. No, it's so funny because, you know, a Black beauty shop is a cultural icon in and of itself. So you might imagine that, you know, all of these women who came in were kind of like, this is the 80s, right? So this was old school. The beauty shop was in Harlem, and there was quite the cast of characters who would come through who would want their, you know, their hair straightened, or they want their hair, you know, put up in curls, or, you know, you have like the iconic image of, you know, the woman sitting under the dryer. You know, it was quite fun.
It sounds like a tremendous amount of fun.
Yeah, and then of course the conversation always centered around politics, you know, what was happening with you know, the neighborhood, you know, who is who, you know, who's involved with who, and, you know, who's got this and who's got that. And then, of course, you know, there was always kind of the, you got to go run your numbers. Yeah, because, you know, everybody's like into their, you know, kind of little side hustle gambling thing. That was pretty hilarious, too.
You mentioned the side hustle, and that's certainly something you've sort of cultivated in your own life. And I know that when you put out your book Divas Doing Business, you had a brush with a very famous actor, because the foreword is by Morgan Freeman, who I know many people will know being kind of Hollywood elite. So I just wondered how your brush with Morgan Freeman came about.
So Morgan Freeman is an amazing human being, and the man that you see on screen is the man in person. So I've had the good fortune of calling him a friend, an advisor, a mentor for many years now. And I actually met him when I was working at Intel, and I was the marketing and communications manager for our global diversity organization. And I actually hired Morgan to do a spokesperson gig for an event that we were doing in Atlanta. So I was like, hey, you know what? I'll step up and, you know, be Morgan Freeman's personal assistant for the day. Why not? And so so I did all of the super sleuthing that I needed to do to understand, you know, who he was and his background and all that good stuff. Because at the time, you know, I wasn't a super duper Morgan Freeman fan. I know that sounds like heresy coming from somebody like me, but I wasn't stalking him. I wasn't watching all of his movies. Right? You know, I just like, hey, I certainly appreciated him and his talent and for being an iconic actor at the time, but I wasn't like, you know, a number one fan. And so when I found out, though, about him and his career, what was really interesting was that he, too, had a side hustle. And he was a restaurant owner at the time that I was a restaurant owner. And so that's how he and I connected. When we met for the event in Atlanta, we started a conversation, and we were having grits and eggs over, this conversation over grits and eggs at the Ritz-Carlton in Atlanta. And he was just wanting to know more about me and what I was up to and my background and my experience. And when he asked me those questions, I got the opportunity to ask him about his background and started to really engage with him on his entrepreneurial pursuits and how he was, you know, investing in restaurants and other businesses that were building community in places that he cared about. And so that's how the relationship, if you will, was born. And it's been really fruitful ever since. He's an amazing confidant, like I said, an amazing mentor, and someone who I have always admired and looked up to ever since.
That sounds fantastic. In terms of the side hustle, how important has that been in sort of maintaining balance in your life? I mean, I know you talked about actually that it was a hell of a lot to take on being a sort of senior person at a major corporate organization like Intel, actually, what is its function in providing kind of checks and balances in your life, having these other, yeah, business opportunities, business ideas?
I can bring a lot of that sense and sensibility of having run my own business into a corporation, you know, have those conversations with my colleagues and with my stakeholders, with my managers about, you know, things that are really insightful from an entrepreneurial perspective. Because a lot of times what happens, we get insulated in big companies, right? And we don't kind of lift our heads up and look around and look outside enough of our organizations to really understand what's going on and keeping a finger on the pulse of what's happening in the real world. And so, you know, having run businesses like, you know, a restaurant business, I was a partner in a software company. And then, like I said, I have a personal chef company right now. And, you know, that's real life, real people. And so bringing that perspective into a big organization like an Intel or Microsoft where I've worked, you just, you know, give people some insight and some knowledge and some perspective that they don't necessarily get by way of just, you know, interacting with, you know, the folks who they talk to on a daily basis in corporate America. Be creative with constraints, right? Because, you know, when you have a small business, you're on the hook for everything. And it's your investment, it's your time, it's your energy.
Do you think kind of one almost feeds the other? So I guess the entrepreneurial spirit can give the you know, corporate America a boost. And I guess the solidity of corporate America can help you with the business plan and the marketing and promotion of something. Yes. Would you say that's fair? Can they be kind of self-perpetuating things that are in balance?
A lot of my experience in corporate America informs how I run my small businesses. And so for me, having, you know, worked in large companies and have run, you know, big marketing campaigns and have, you know, been a chief of staff, for example, and have, you know, executive experience and all that kind of stuff, you know, it really does help when I'm having conversation in my small business context to, you know, be organized, to be strategic, to, you know, understand how to invest, how to make good decisions, have good process, you know, make sure that we have the discipline that is required to make good decisions about the business and to see things through.
No, absolutely. And I forgot to ask you earlier on, because we actually just happened to be talking on International Women's Day, which is the 8th of March. And in terms of your inspiration from your sort of grandmother that you mentioned there, what kind of life lessons do you think you learned from her, or those experiences that you talked about back in New York?
God rest her soul. She passed away a few years back. And I think about her all the time. And I do think about her every day. And the inspiration, I think, comes in three ways for me. Number one, she was determined. And if she made up her mind about something that she wanted to do, she would do it. If I make up my mind and I'm heading in a direction that I believe is right, that I believe is the pathway to success, I am on it. And there's hardly anything that can get in the way for me achieving that goal. So determination is something that my grandmother inspired in me. The second thing is speaking your mind. So my grandmother did not hold her tongue. I think I'm a little more mindful about speaking my mind in the right, in the right circles and in the right context, and making sure that I kind of, you know, listen in my head before it comes out of my mouth. So I speak my mind, but I do it in a way that is, you know, really careful and really considered. And then I think the third thing is that my grandmother gave me really good, solid advice and counsel about finances. She was one of those women who just saved, you know, her money. And she, in her retirement, you know, lived a pretty comfortable lifestyle as a result. And she also, you know, indulged in luxury, and she traveled, and, you know, she lived her life. She managed her money in a way that could give her the financial freedom to live the life that she wanted to live. And that is something I've definitely role modeled. So those are the three things that I've learned from my grandma.
They're great lessons, and certainly relevant to today. I mentioned at the top of the show that you were an entrepreneur and you'd started your own businesses and you'd worked in marketing. I mean, what do you consider the toughest of the things, or what's the most challenging thing do you think you've had to do in terms of either publishing books or starting businesses or working in leadership roles with pressure?
Well, I think all of them are tough in a way that's unique to each one. So from my corporate career standpoint, as I've ascended through the ranks and become a senior leader in organizations, I find that the higher I go, the more at risk I become, right? And that's because every organization on this planet change the way that they view their customers, change the way that they view the solutions and the services and the products that they're delivering. I found that in the last 5 years in particular, in my career, I have been, kind of just trying to stay ahead of the next reorganization. So that's been the toughest thing, I think, for me from my corporate experience. On the small business side, what has been tough for me has been just finding the time and making sure that I have everything prioritized in a way that I don't let things kind of fall by the wayside, because it is tough to, kind of manage, a corporate career and an entrepreneurial career. And so the beauty of my current venture is that I have a partner, and so he's got 50%, I've got the other 50%, and so I can handle my 50% right within, the hours of the day that I have, and then he's focused on the front end of the service delivery, the customer engagement part of it, working with our network of chefs and bartenders and servers, right? He does a lot of the quote unquote hard work. I do a lot of the cerebral work, and keeping things organized and making sure that our bills are paid and all that good stuff.
I just wondered now, because I think people maybe now are starting to look to the future, certainly more than they were a few months ago. The future is certainly still a very unpredictable place. But what is the kind of view of the future of work in the US, do you think?
Well, I think that there are a couple of things that are driving people's hope and optimism. Like I said, the vaccination regimen is finally starting to take hold, and people are starting to see the light at the end of the tunnel. Because it has been a long road for all of us, over the last 12 months. So I think that's one thing. The other thing, too, is that as, life is starting to look like it could potentially be back to normal within the next, 4, 5, 6 months, then that means businesses are starting to invest in, bringing workers back. I think that the last thing is that I know when I talk to my friends and I talk to, my former colleagues and others in my network, that everybody is just ready to go. I mean, now is a good time to be looking for a job because, like I said, the market's starting to open up and, companies are starting to invest and they're starting to think about, where they actually cut back previously. They can start to reinvest now because they have more certainty about where the economy's going. So yeah, there's a lot of hope and a lot of optimism among, at least, in my circle. But I also just tend to be hopeful and optimistic as a general principle. I want to see the sunshine, please.
Actually, one question I forgot to ask you, I must remember this, and I've done this with all of our guests so far on Comms from the Shed. I'd like to ask you, and you can take a moment to think about this if you would like, but I'd like you to share an unusual fact about yourself that people listening might not necessarily know. And people have told me about all sorts of things. They've been extras in films. They like roller skating. I mean, is there anything that...
Yeah, I think one quirky thing that people may not know about me is that I actually worked as a commercial model for several years. So here in the Portland area, I had an agent, and I would do gigs. I would go, show up at... different auditions for parts in commercials, for print advertising campaigns. I've done voiceover work as part of that as well. So I had this kind of budding you know, kind of creative career that I had for a while that I had to let it go because I started my own business. And then I also, you know, started to get really busy with my corporate career. So I had to, you know, kind of let the commercial modeling and voiceover work and all that stuff go.
I know that your first job was at McDonald's, and I think to quote, it was so that you could buy your own things. And I think that's a very good sort of aspiration. What do you remember about those times, and where was this? Because I worked at McDonald's myself once, actually, in West London.
Really?
So I kind of have memories of, yeah. No, I have memories. I used to open up the McDonald's in Richmond, which felt like in the middle of the night when I was a student. So,
Yes.
I didn't know we were going to have this in common, but this is great. Yeah. Fun. What are your memories of working in the Golden Arches?
No, right? My memory of the Golden Arches. So your listeners know, let me put this in context for you. When I worked at McDonald's, the year that I was there was the year that they introduced Chicken McNuggets. And you know, what was really interesting about working at McDonald's was that I didn't really last for like more than a couple of weeks. I think I was there long enough to get my first paycheck and that was it. I couldn't handle it. I couldn't handle the grease. I couldn't handle the, you know, the smell and just being around the food. Like, but what, I mean, the irony is that, you know, 25 years later, I opened my own restaurant business, but yeah, I couldn't handle it. Oh my God. I was just like, I can't do this. And no.
Excellent. I'm glad I asked you about that because we've found some common ground there, which we didn't realize we had. What are your kind of hopes for where you kind of the next stage of your sort of career path is going to take you?
Sure. I've got three things that I'm looking at because it's not too far into the future that I'm intending to be retired. I am going to stop working at some point. I am. I will always have something going because that's my side hustle nature. But kind of the day-to-day grind is going to come to an end, you know, at some point. But until then, I am seeking out my next marketing leadership role in corporate America. So we are in the throes of that as we speak. The second thing that I'm focused on in the short term is making sure that Driscoll Cuisine and Cocktail Concepts changes the game for personal chef services in Phoenix and continuing to grow that business with my partner, Brian Driscoll. And then I think the third thing is to really appreciate everything that I need to do to stay healthy, focus on some self-care, right? You know, that's something that I have had to learn over the years is to, you know, take better care of myself and find those opportunities for rejuvenation, to recharge, to refocus, re-energize. It's so important. I mean, if there's nothing else that our listeners who are engaged in this conversation with us today take away, take care of yourself because you can't do anything for yourself or anybody else if you are run down. Definitely find those points along the way to stay, you know, true to yourself and true to your health for sure.
Well, I think that's a wonderful moment to end on. I think it's a very good summary. Some hope for the future and the months and years ahead. So, Monique, thanks for talking to us today and joining us on Comms from the Shed.
Thank you very much, Sam. It's been my pleasure.
Thanks for listening to the latest episode of Comms from the Shed. Hit subscribe if you want to know when new episodes are available, or check out our Instagram page for the latest updates.